Hi, I'm Jess.
And I'm Lucas.
And welcome to another episode of Dose of Pharma.
Yeah. So Jess, who's our guest for today?
Our guest today is Mug Mishad. He's a PhD student and we're going to talk to him about his experience doing a PhD at Monash. So let's get into the episode.
Good, thanks.
How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too busy, actually. Just been writing. So it's been all right. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Are you still at work?
Yeah, I'm actually in Ben's office, if you guys know Ben Coyd. So he's left for Denmark. He's taken a position there. So I've just taken over his office for this interview.
Wow. Busy day.
So I think we'll start off today with asking you to tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, no worries. So my name's Mub Mershad and I'm a third year PhD student at MIPS. So I did my undergrad at Monash in pharmaceutical science and I started in 2013. And from then on, I did an honours straight after that and then went into PhD as well. And I'm currently doing PhD with Ben Boyd, who is a great professor. Would recommend people to go have a chat with him and see if you're interested in his sort of work. But that's probably my background in terms of my education. But I grew up in a small country town in Victoria, so I'm from rural Victoria, out in Traralgon. It's out in Gippsland, so 2 hours east of Melbourne. And moved straight out of home at 18 to uni here, which was I thoroughly enjoyed that. Lived at college for 2 years just down the road at University College, which is one of the Melbourne Uni colleges, and then moved out with friends. So definitely enjoyed those experiences as well.
Yeah, it's definitely fun when you like fully experience the uni life.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something I think a lot of kids don't get at MIPS, unfortunately, just because we're so small. And you definitely have to kind of make sure you're getting that experience by being involved with everything that the Parkville campus has to offer.
Yeah, like my family's also rural, so I had to move out at 18 to go to university. And I think like it brings a lot of independence, but like my experience is most people in the course still live at home and have travel because most of them are local to Melbourne.
Yeah, that's the same experience I have. And funny enough, I've just moved back home as well. So my family moved up this year from Traralgon to Berwick, which is on the east as well. So just in the last year of PhD, decided to move back home to save some money and focus on the work I've got to finish up.
Yeah, at least you still got the whole experience of living with friends and like on campus and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. It's, it's something I wouldn't take away, that's for sure.
What do you do outside of work?
So currently I wouldn't say too much at the moment in my third year. It's getting to the crucial points where I've got a few things to finalise and really I'm looking forward to finishing off hopefully in the next probably 8 months. And that's probably priority. But before that, so starting PhD, I was doing a lot of, wouldn't say a lot, but trying to be active in terms of playing sports. So I played cricket, started basketball with a few other PhD students as well, and have been involved in groups at uni. So AAPS, which is American Association of Pharmaceutical Scientists, was involved with that, and obviously socialized with friends. So did a lot of that.
Wow. Seems like your extracurricular and all your hobbies are very rich and like fulfilling.
Yeah, definitely. Especially I think one of the key aspects of doing a PhD is to keep that social network of friends going. A lot of people get sort of hermit and really get stuck into their work, which if that's your personality, sure, but that's 100% not me. And I think COVID, I've definitely learned through COVID, I can't just stay in a room. It makes me a bit weird just to stay at home. So having that network of friends and building that up through undergrad. So if you're lucky enough to do pharmaceutical science here or pharmacy, you see the same people over and over again, as you guys know. So I definitely recommend people to make good friends with your cohort, and even with the cohorts above and below, because that's definitely helped me in the long run.
So you mentioned like you're really happy with your supervisor, Ben Boyd. So how did you go about picking your supervisor and picking like your topic for your PhD?
Yeah, interesting question. So the way I went about it was, unsure what they do now, but in my time a few years ago, they advertised third year projects. So I believe that that's still going for the current cohorts as well. So if you're an advanced with honors student, you get priority for one of these research projects with one of the researchers here. So out of that, one of the projects Ben put up was all about nanotech, and it was sort of a buzzword back then and probably still is. But the fact that it was more formulation based rather than some of the bio stuff that people do here, I was kind of gravitated towards that. So I sent Ben an email, and this is all in third year. And from there, just had a quick Zoom meeting with him. Or back then, I think we used Skype. So Skype meeting with him, and we just sort of clicked. And I didn't shop around anymore after that. I did my third year project with him. Our personalities got along pretty well. He's pretty laid back, but also can be tough when he needs to be. And he plays golf, which is one of my other hobbies. So we do play a bit of golf together. But I think the main thing I took away from selecting a PhD and a supervisor and what I tell other students, and especially honors students, is that you need to get along with your supervisor. If that's not the case, you're probably not going to enjoy your PhD. It's 3 years, could be 4 years. It's a long time, and you're going to be in a close work environment with this person for quite a while. So you have to be sure that you're going to get along with them. And Ben and I do. And a lot of my friends get along with their supervisors really well as well. So haven't seen much of an issue with MIPS around that.
Yeah, definitely. So you've been mentioning that you were gravitated towards nanotechnology when you were looking through like the third year projects. Can you tell us a little bit more about what it involves and like why, what's your passion in it now that you know more about it?
Yeah, so I actually don't work in nanotech at all anymore. So that was the third year project he advertised. And funnily enough, the project changed quite a bit. So that was what he advertised, but he sort of pushed me towards another project he had, which he hadn't really put out there yet. The way this project kind of came up was him and another professor were drinking some coffee out in Europe somewhere when conferences were allowed. And they just had this thought. So he'd just come back from conference when I called him, and they thought of my project. So he gave that to me, and my project's all about creating new formulations to prevent opioid overdoses. And that is an area which I'm really interested in, especially with the rise of the opioid epidemic going on in the US, and you can see it in Europe and in Australia as well. It's an area which I think doesn't get enough attention in terms of pharma companies and pharmaceutical students. And I really like the fact that I was working on a cancer-based project. It was a kind of something different that no one's really done. And it gave me the opportunity to really explore what could be done in this kind of area.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting, like very exciting. So do you think you're going to continue with that area after you finish your PhD, or what do you hope to achieve with your PhD qualification?
At the start of my PhD, yeah, I probably would have said yes. I think there was a bit more ambition of getting patents on the sort of formulations I create. And that could still be the case. But coming to the back end, I think I've realised I don't really want to stay in academia. But if there are jobs out there related to stopping overdose and formulating in this area, definitely that's something I'd be looking for, definitely considering I'm qualified for it. Whereas, yeah, the chance of me staying in academia working on something like this, if it's with Ben, sure, really love that relationship. But outside of that, I don't think so.
So what kind of industry jobs do you think like you'd be interested in?
Yeah, that's a process I'm going through
now. You're still going to work that out.
Yeah, so coming into PhD, I was really into patents, which is what you guys did last week. So Nick was one of Ben's students, and Nick was a very good mentor. So he was a fun guy to be around starting PhD. So he's obviously gone in the patent area, and that was something I was interested in. And one of the other researchers here, John Quinn, does a little bit of patent work in the past. So I've spoken to him, and it's an area which I'm interested in, but unsure if that's where I want to end up now. I'm looking at the financial companies and the big four accounting firms, so I may apply for their graduate programs. I think my preference would be kind of to move away from science. I don't believe lab works for me. I can do it, but it's not where I want to end up. I'd rather move into some more management style areas.
So can I ask, like, what made you decide to do PhD if you realised that lab work wasn't the thing for you?
Yeah, so I suppose with PhD, my decision, you could look at it two ways. So I did well enough in honours to get offered the position. I applied for it just in case. I wasn't 100% sure when I was finishing honours whether I'd want to do it or not. When I started, I was still a bit questioning my decision, whether this is the right thing, should I continue on with this? And I took 3 months off. So there is the opportunity to take some time off while doing your PhD if you need a break. And that's what I did. So I got 3 months off, just went, didn't really work in that time, went overseas for a bit. And it freshened me up. And I thought, okay, I've started this. I do like this project. I want to see where it goes. And I'd say only because of this project that I'm doing, I've stuck around. I'm glad now that I have stuck around and am finishing, because I believe that having a PhD, it kind of proves to you, especially for me, it proves to me that I've accomplished something in the end, whether it be for your next job or whether it just be a personal goal, it is an accomplishment. So there's definitely benefits of having it. My dad's a PhD as well, so he's obviously pushing it from the background, but it's not the final factor at all. But yeah, hopefully the sort of positions I want to get into in terms of management, I've heard having a doctorate does help getting you to those positions. They're more likely going to promote you. But again, who knows what actually happens in industry? This is just what we got told here, where most people have a PhD. So it would be interesting to see what actually happens.
That's definitely what I've heard. It depends on like what kind of job you want, whether you should get a PhD or not. And getting like higher level ones, so you've got to do a lot of thinking in, and that tends to be the ones that we enjoy a bit more.
Yeah.
As like scientists, you tend to like, yeah, want a PhD, but who knows what actually like.
Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned previously that you had a fair few extracurricular activities when you started your PhD. So how did you go about managing doing those and like balancing your PhD at the same time?
I wouldn't say I'm the best time manager, but I think I'm proof that you can still do a PhD without being the best at it. So there's definitely students in my group that are excellent at managing their time. I think one of your producers, Christine, is doing honours and she's great at it. She's doing so many different things and still on top of her work, whereas I think I took it a bit too easy when I started. Everything's new to you, or may not be new, but it's you're just starting out. You think you have three and a half years to finish, so you may take some things easy. But in terms of extracurricular, I did it after hours most of the time anyway, so cricket was on the weekends and during summer. And playing basketball was usually late, and the opportunities with APS and some of the other committees I've been on, they're hour meetings. You just have to kind of finish them. So they're not like you're not getting caught up in that too often. It may be once a fortnight you have a meeting, and you can sort of manage that with the time load where you have as a PhD.
So were there any like specific types of methods or like approach when you were like managing your time? Because from what I've heard that PhD students, they spend a lot of their time during the day working on site at Parkville. So I'm just wondering like if you had to shift your hours in during the day or like make sure that you have the most of your time of your free time during the weekends.
Yeah. So I think it really depends on how your relationship with your supervisor is for something like that. So there are supervisors that push for a 9 to 5 or nine, like you stay at work during these work hours and you only work on your PhD. That's one of the reasons why I get along with Ben, where Ben isn't as strict on that sort of stuff. He understands that, you know, we're young adults and or adults and have other commitments. And as long as your work's done, that's what's important. So whether I've come in on the weekends to finish work, I wouldn't say that's because of my extracurricular. That's more because I've just had the free time to do so. But I've been lucky enough that, you know, my supervisor's not on my back trying to get me to do work while I have something else to do. But I've definitely seen other PhD students where their supervisor's emailing constantly, being like, you know, why aren't you in at this time? Why isn't this occurring? So you need to figure out if that's the sort of PhD you want to do and you're comfortable with those hours, then fine. And a lot of students are. Like, most of us are in at 9 to 5 anyway. So yeah, it hasn't been that big of an issue.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really important to like pick the right supervisor that suits you for you to enjoy your PhD and to get the most out of it.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say that's the biggest takeaway that I've gotten from this as well, just having that relationship. And it's not only for the PhD period. So your supervisor is someone that will be your support for your career onwards as well. They're going to be one of the first probably references that your employer calls. They're going to be essentially a friend for life, hopefully, if you have that good repertoire with them.
Seems like keeping like the connection with your supervisor is very important in terms of like how you fully experience like the lab during the PhD. But I just want to like add another question on top of that. So you were saying that you also like sometimes come into work during the weekends to finish it off. So how are you able to hold yourself accountable, like to make sure that you get the work done when you like organize time according to your own?
Yeah, I'd say, again, I'm probably not the best for accountability, but the way I've gone about it is if I have a set goal, so it may be, goal setting would be it's that I have a set experiment I want to complete. I need to do X amount of replicates. Until that's done in my head, I won't kind of do something else, I guess. If I need to be on the weekend, I'll come in on the weekend. One of the things you'll learn if you do a MIPS PhD is that you may need to book instruments, and they're not always free during the weekdays. You'll have a lot of people trying to access the same instrument from three different, essentially, departments. So you may have to just come into the weekend because of necessity. Also, on the weekend, there's less people here, which I like being in the lab with less people, just so I can pump some music. But yeah, the accountability, I think if you goal set properly and just know what you're trying to achieve, whether that's for the week or the day, that's a good skill to have.
Yeah, I think one of our episodes previously at Dose of Final, we actually had someone come in and talk about goal setting. And yeah, it sounds like it's very relevant at your work as well.
Yeah, yeah, like goal setting or just having kind of that idea of what you want to complete. In saying that, for some PhDs, it may not be as linear. So mine, luckily enough, I know that I need to complete a certain task, and then based on that task, I can move on to the next one. Others may be doing more discovery sort of work where they can do whatever sort of new science they want and just have to correlate results. But you just need to sit down and kind of write it all out in front of you, just to make sure you have an idea.
Yeah. In PhDs, I've heard lots of things tend to go wrong. Nothing ever works like perfectly and requires a lot of resilience. What do you do to stay motivated and overcome setbacks?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in my PhD, I've had plenty of setbacks, both for me and for my work. So motivation's been a massive issue. And as I said, I wasn't really committed to PhD when I started. I was still questioning it. So just having the motivation to come in may be a struggle for some students, because I knew that was for me initially when I didn't see kind of outcomes coming. So it's a cliche, but a PhD is definitely a roller coaster where you'll get massive highs, some low lows, and then you'll just be in the middle at times. So it's just about, I think you have to be honest with yourself in terms of where you are. If you're not feeling well and you know nothing's going to happen, I think we're becoming more aware of like mental health issues around the PhD and postgrads, that if you need a day off, you should take a day off. You shouldn't force yourself just to come in and make yourself even more upset over a result if you know nothing's going well. Maybe some space or a walk or something's, you know, it helps. Definitely during COVID, my PhD's run through. So in my second year, I think COVID hit, or just as first year was ending, which is probably the worst time for me personally, as all my international conferences got cancelled. So I had a big one planned in Las Vegas last year. and unfortunately didn't get to go to that. And after all of those things got cancelled, my motivation really tanked. They were some of the key kind of milestones I wanted to do. And so that was pushing me for a while where, you know, I knew if I got this work done, I'd be going to this conference, I'd enjoy the conference, meet new people, network, potentially, you know, make some networks for jobs. And then when that all got cancelled, I was very kind of down about it. You know, why am I doing this work anymore? There's no socialization. I'm not meeting new people. And it took a while to overcome. And I think I'm not the only one that's gone through that. A lot of PhDs have experienced that through this time. And a lot of undergrad students as well. It's COVID's been a tough time. But
yeah, that sounds very disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah, you just, I think, yeah, again, if you have that end goal, I think if you just keep at it. So one of the things Ben says is like, you know, even writing one sentence a day is better than none. So if you just keep doing work, even if it's something small, just a small little task, and just keep ticking off these tiny, tiny milestones, it'll, you know, make you feel better maybe if you just complete a task, and then hopefully that can build to something.
Sometimes like breaking things down and then like making yourself feel like you achieved something, even if it's just a tiny thing, can feel really satisfying. And I think that's very helpful in terms of like when you like near the end point and like need some sort of motivation.
Yeah, I think more so in the middle of a PhD, it's pretty useful to have that sort of mindset. So when you start, you've got that eagerness to kind of, you know, get on with it, see what this is like. This is all brand new. And then you probably hit a point of where everything is just like a daily routine. There's nothing super exciting about stuff happening. It's just happening as it goes. But now that I've passed my sort of third year, I can see the end line and I'm getting more motivated now to finish. So you probably have your two polar ends, but it's just about keeping that motivation going through the middle. And some students are excellent at that, some are not. There's no right way to do a PhD. Like you can take many different paths, and it's all personal. Your PhD is your own kind of personal journey along with your research journey. You understand a lot about yourself in this time. So you shouldn't compare to the other PhD students as well. Everyone's on their own sort of path. So that's some good advice I've been given. And another set of advice that my friends told me is that the data is the data. So once you get your results and you've done the appropriate sort of parameters for it, that's your results. So it's not about getting upset or getting super happy about it. It's just, you know, you've got your results, now it's time to write it.
Yeah.
Results are results and you can't do anything to change without being a bad scientist.
Yeah.
For students aspiring to do postgraduate studies and ultimately work in research, what do you think it takes to be successful?
Yeah, loaded question, that one.
I suppose you don't want to work in research, but like, what do you think it takes for someone to be successful in a PhD?
I've still been surrounded by a lot of people that have worked in research. I can clearly see from, I guess, Ben and my dad are good examples of both professors in their field, and they work a lot. So they're always out working, either helping their students, but this is at the top end. So if if you strive to be a researcher, you definitely should do a PhD. If academia is an area where you're interested in, I wouldn't even say it's an option. I think doing a PhD is kind of a must in that kind of in that field. And it just gives you sort of the contacts and knowing, you know, who does research where, which groups are doing what sort of research, and gives you contacts all over the world as well. Usually attend conferences, you attend different sort of seminars and just, you know, get to know people. And then onwards. So publishing is a big aspect of that if you want to be a researcher. So publish your data, something which I'm notoriously bad at. So if you do want to be a good researcher, a few people have told me you may need a couple of papers, first author papers to move on to a postdoc. Or even some big companies require you to have two first author papers. And from there, yeah, it's just about applying for grants, applying for research opportunities, you know, contacting people. I think that's one of the best advice I can give is that don't be nervous to email people, just even if it's a random question. Like getting your name out there is better than better than nothing. And being curious is always going to be beneficial.
Yeah, that sounds like very good advice. I definitely get very hesitant when contacting people because it's just like, oh, I don't want to look a bit stupid. Like, but I think, yeah, it is very important to get your name out there and they understand that you're like, you are like just new to the field and that you can't be an expert in everything right away.
Yeah, and especially if you're, if you've done your undergrad here, you will know most of these lecturers, or at least you know your lecturers, and as we're a small cohort, you get to know them pretty well. So just even going to their office, so you can go to their office, just knock on the door and introduce yourself and say, you know, you're interested in this sort of thing, can you help, or do you have any ideas? And most researchers and professors are, you know, happy to talk to you. Some may tell you to go away as they're busy, but, you know, you just have to put yourself out there and take that punt.
Yeah, that seemed like a great place to end it. So thank you for joining us today. It's been really interesting and great to hear about, like, your experience doing a PhD. Yeah, definitely learned a lot about that.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
To conclude the episode, we wish to acknowledge the people of the Kulin Nations on whose land we are gathered today. We pay our respects to the elders past, present and emerging. For those listening who may be based elsewhere, we pay our respects to the traditional owners of the land from wherever you may be listening from. We especially welcome any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people listening in today.